You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And good morning. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north. It's 7:06 on a Wednesday morning, October 22nd. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison, A2. Ellie Bordeaux, Up North News newsletter editor, joining us in just a sec. And then we'll also be talking this hour to the president of the Viroqua School Board about the school funding system in the state. It stinks. That includes this new state budget, where the best Republicans would agree to with Governor Tony Evers was some additional school funds in some parts of the budget, but basically a 0% increase in general state aid, and inflation's not 0%. So that's making it harder for school districts to avoid another round of referendums. And so we'll talk about the system. We've got Civic Media sports editor Jimmy Cuska coming up. And then looking ahead at 8:35, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us. Normally she's here Mondays and Fridays, but is going to join us because yesterday there was a virtual press conference with a bipartisan group of Wisconsin lawmakers working on legislation that would increase access to resources and education about menopause. And they were joined by actress Halle Berry, who has been a menopause activist, trying to get people to learn more about symptoms, treating them, research, things like that. And so we'll play back some of her remarks and talk to Dr. Lyerly about that from the standpoint of an OBGYN. That, again, coming up at 8:35. Temperatures around the state right now range from 37 degrees in Manitowish Waters and Solon Springs to 48 degrees in Shawano. Pretty much all of Wisconsin is at some point in the mid-40s right now. It's 41 here in Chippewa Falls. And again, things will be getting a bit more seasonable for temperatures after today's last shot of a little bit of rain before things move out of the area and we get some pleasant weather for the rest of the week. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy with showers and 43. We got about a tenth of an inch of rain overnight. He says it felt like November with a high of 43 and a wind chill of 38 for much of the day yesterday. Says he has a meeting in Shawano today and some errands to run. It may be one of the first times that Rob has not talked about mowing, although I don't doubt that he, like us here, still has some mowing jobs, mostly to grind up the leaves and mulch them up and get them out of the way. But again, you know, we've got temperatures in the mid-40s by and large around Wisconsin. So stay inside, pour yourself a cup of coffee, and read up on that Up North News daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Ellie Bordeaux puts it together for us and joins us now on Wednesday mornings. Ellie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you guys?
That's good. It's nice to see you. It's nice to have you here today talking about the things that you put in. And let's start with something local that you ask people to submit ideas or photos about. And that would be pizza places in their area. And I get the feeling a lot of people, if they've got a place they really like, there's like a sense of pride. They want to tell you about it. How was the response?
Yes, absolutely. I love getting responses. I love our Locals Love section because it allows us to highlight some small businesses around the state, those kinds of things. But I do think that is very true. People have a lot of pride in their pizza places around the state. I got so many emails and so many responses of people saying, this is the best pizza place in the state. This is so great. You need to check this out. So many recommendations. We've got some from Fond du Lac, Janesville, Eau Claire. So we every Friday have a different Locals Love section. And last week was pizza. This upcoming week, we're doing burgers. So be sure to send those in. I want to hear about your best burger places. I want to know where to check out around the state. So it's really great.
I'm guessing, as I was looking at some of the reviews, like Paul here says about Wisco's in Eau Claire, it's what I like to call the most Wisconsin place I've ever been to. There is also axe throwing, which is also very fun. Their Midwest deep dish pizza is the absolute best. I am not aware of any place, Paul, other than that place that combines pizzas and axe throwing. I'm still not really sure how we've allowed axe throwing in public places like restaurants, but was that one of the more unusual ones that you saw of everything that was put in?
Yeah, I would say that one was a little bit more unusual. I have also never heard of the combination of axe throwing and pizza in the same place, but hey, to each their own. And if it works, it works. So yeah. I like it.
There was Harry's Prohibition Bistro in Sheboygan that said the moment you walk in and smell the wood-fired pizza oven and the 1920s decor brings you back in time. My favorite is the walnut pizza with Italian sausage. The burst of cream cheese with each bite adds an extra great flavor. From Merrill. Merrill is the person who submitted this. That's new on so many levels. The walnut, the cream cheese. I'm sure you heard some other interesting flavor combinations in pizza.
Yeah, we've got another one from Elkhart Lake about a beef marsala pizza. That's something that's I have never heard of before, but hey, sounds great. That sounds like something I need to check out. So I'm interested.
So not only can we talk about the local pizza places, but the different pizza combinations. And before we get going with folks here, when we talk about pizza combinations, you don't have to send in the Hawaiian one, the right. ham and the pineapple. That's right up there with candy corn. It's going right into the garbage can.
No,
just Parker, come on, man.
You're killing me.
I can't say I agree with that either.
So y'all can have whatever weird takes you want, but I want to hear them. We've already heard that one. We've heard that one to death. But now we're hearing these new ones. A beef marsala. I've heard of chicken marsala, but beef marsala pizza. And then you've got the walnut pizza with Italian sausage and a little bit of cream cheese. So what else we got out there? I definitely invite comments coming out. Oh, no, not Tony, too. Tony, pineapple was made for pizza.
Oh, no.
Oh, Tony. God, we're going to miss you and all your comments you used to send to us. Anyway, so now that I've opened up that can of sardines or whatever else you like on your pizza, people have really taken to it. What are you looking for next?
So we're looking for burgers next. So this Friday, we're going to be featuring your favorite burger spots. I want to hear them. Send them in. Send us some unique burgers that you have seen around the state. What are some weird flavor combinations that maybe you wouldn't think about? Kind of like a beef marsala pizza. What would be the equivalent of that to a burger?
I will say that in the Madison area, one of the things I miss is at the Great Dane. And the Great Dane has a burger patty and a brat patty. And then, like I think it's fried onions and something else. And it's on a pretzel bun. And I might have to leave and drive down to Madison for lunch. That's just, I miss it so much. Yeah. I got a couple of great places up in Eau Claire. There's the Amber Inn. Again, just this little tiny corner bar, but just amazing burgers off their little griddle there behind the bar. Corton House makes great burgers too. So yeah, we definitely want everybody else's favorites. Ellie, you got a favorite in the Oconomowoc area?
I'm trying to think. I would say, honestly, my favorite is probably, I would say the most unique is Crafty Cow in Oconomowoc. They've got like a peanut butter burger, which is very interesting. But I know it sounds weird, but it works. So they have a location, I believe, in Milwaukee as well. But yeah, I would say Crafty Cow is like our biggest spot in Oconomowoc for burgers. But I do think too, it's like kind of the smaller underground places that also sometimes have the best, you know, like you don't expect it, but for some reason it's the best.
You know? No, you know, you remind me that also in downtown Eau Claire, the Livery has a unique burger. I haven't had it for a bit, but I know that there's like some pepper jelly that's on it. And I forget what kind of if cheese is on there. Parker, anything from a Whitewater standpoint?
There is a place in Whitewater that has a peanut butter burger. I can't remember what it is. I think it's at Fat Jack's. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Fat Jack's. There you go.
Okay. So there you go. We want your burger places. We want to know exactly what it is that makes them so good, the weird flavor combinations. We'll definitely take it all. Here's one from the Livery. It's gorgonzola cheese and a bacon onion balsamic jam. A bacon onion balsamic jam with arugula on a brioche bun.
Ooh, now, that sounds good.
It is. I'd rather have the pretzel, but I am not. Brioche to me is like too sweet for a hamburger bun. Mm. I want that as like, you know, French toast. That brioche is the best for that.
That's really fair.
Really went into food talk here today, didn't we? Okay, well,
yeah, I guess so.
talked about pizza. We've talked about burgers. Let's talk about fish. But we're not eating these ones because they're made of paper. So.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. So in July, people from around the world participated with the Sierra Club of the Wisconsin chapter, and they set the world record for the largest display of origami fish ever created, with 86,262 origami fish. And so the display was set up in the Urban Ecology Center in Milwaukee, with each one with a message to shut down Line 5. And so now that display is moving to the state capitol, moving to Madison. So they're looking for volunteers to help with setup. They're looking for help with preparing for the display. They're looking for people to come attend the press conference. That'll be later. So all that information is in the newsletter as well. And yeah, it's just a big message of for state lawmakers of a call to shut down Line 5. So that's why they've done that.
We had that in our on the radio show and in the newsletter back in May, as by setting this world record for collecting origami fish, they could call attention to Enbridge's Line 5, how they want to reroute it around the Bad River Reservation. But the tribal community is like, well, yeah, you can go around it, but you're still putting a pipeline through the Bad River, you know, watershed. And so the court fights go on all of that. And so this was their way of calling attention. They had a website, fishforfuture.org. Again, fishforfuture.org, where you can read more about the collection and everything they want to do now to display it. So a nice little follow-up on there. And then finally, Ellie, you've got a new feature called Civic Check-In. As we described it in the last hour, there's a lot of big words out there: authoritarianism, fascism, oligarchy, things like that. And they sound like, you know, unattainable, but it really is important in this day and age to brush up on these terms, because they demonstrate, you know, that there's some real threats to democracy and freedom in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we wanted to include this section, is a lot of these words are being thrown around a lot more recently. And some of these words, I would say people maybe haven't heard since high school, like since their high school civics class, you know? And so I think it's important for all of us to brush up on our knowledge of different political words and understanding what it means for you in your daily life. Are these patterns that you're seeing now, like being able to come to recognize those in your own way and that kind of thing. So today we focused on an oligarchy and talking about the different types of oligarchies, what that means, the patterns to recognize. So every week we take a different type of term and kind of define it, go in depth with it, and then ask for your thoughts on what do you see in our day and age now.
And I think that's a great thing to do, because, again, words can get thrown about without having them be technically correct. For me, the most glaring example are all the folks on the political right who love to scream socialism, that this is socialist, clearly demonstrating that they're not completely grasping what socialism actually means, but they love to throw out that big word. Well, if people are going to be saying that things are perhaps similar to an oligarchy or fascist, it might be important to, again, brush up on what it means to see that in that context, those words are being correctly used right now, unlike socialism over the past, you know, decade or two. So to read more about that and everything else that Ellie Bordeaux puts together, head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe up in the top banner. Ellie, thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.
Yep, you as well. Appreciate it very much. Let's take a look at sports now at 7:19, where, again, we've got just one little note I wanted to pass along. The Packers taking on Aaron Rodgers at Pittsburgh Sunday at 7:20. Pregame starting at 5 on several civic media stations. A homeroom segment is coming up in 15 minutes. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
So talk a little more sports here at 7:22, just about 7:23 on this Wednesday morning. Let's work our way backwards from Sunday, where the Packers will be taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers, Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's a Sunday night game, 7:20 kickoff, and so coverage will begin at 5 p.m. Sunday on several Civic Media stations. This is the part where producer Parker Olson makes his bold prediction on how the Packers are going to do against Aaron Rodgers. First time they've actually played him. Aaron Rodgers, if he defeats the Packers, it will be the 25th NFL team he's defeated, which would tie him with like everybody else for most number of times a quarterback has defeated all the other teams in the NFL. How's he going to do?
I don't know. He's looked really good, which like really worries me. I think he might kind of tear up the secondary that we have.
But he's also 71 years old. So it's true. Very possible that his, you know, he could fall and break a hip.
Micah Parsons could. Yeah.
Mike. Oh.
Did you think? Oh, yeah.
We get Micah Parsons from the Cowboys and he goes after Aaron Rodgers. Oh, boy. You could not have predicted this a couple of years ago, could you? That this is the matchup that we're talking about. Yeah. But that is potentially what's in the works for Sunday. For Saturday, you've got the Badgers at Oregon. That, again, is a late game. Coverage will begin at 4 p.m. Saturday on several Civic Media stations. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more. The Badger men's basketball team. It's an exhibition game, but their season's underway. You can catch some games on the Civic Media Radio Network on Friday. They are at Milwaukee's Fiserv Forum to take on Oklahoma. That's Friday at 7 p.m. as part of the, I wish we had the right echo sound effect here, the Bad Boy Mower Series.
Bad Boy Mower Series.
There, that was perfect. It was like so technical. Yeah. We're taking on Oklahoma, Badgers, Oklahoma men's basketball Friday at 7. And then there's an exhibition game next Wednesday at the Kohl Center versus Platteville. And then the season opener the following Monday, November 3rd at the Kohl Center versus Campbell University, the Campbell Fighting Camels, getting the Badger men's basketball team going. So again, Friday night's game against Oklahoma, 7 p.m. Pre-game starts at 6:30 on Civic Media stations in Wisconsin Rapids and Amory and Richland Center. Can you believe we're talking basketball and hockey already?
Yeah, you know, it's weird to me that they're playing Oklahoma first before they play Platteville. That seems a punch in the mouth to start and then a cupcake after.
Trial by fire. You know? Tony puts on YouTube, Steelers defense isn't very good. Joe Flacco lit them up and he's 80 years old. Well, there you go.
So good there point.
There is that possibility there. All right. Some of the other stories that we wanted to cover here for you include this whole notion of Donald Trump, the president of the United States, and his unique solutions to problems, and not necessarily our problems, but he had a problem with the trade deficit and found his own unique way to start a trade war with China, which is ending up hurting farmers in Wisconsin and across the country whose soybean markets to China have dried up as China has decided to buy its soybeans from Brazil and Argentina. And now we get word from President Trump that to help out his buddy in Argentina, he's looking to purchasing more beef from Argentina. Not sitting real well with the aforementioned Wisconsin farmers and ranchers in other states who are looking at this guy, many of whom they voted for, and saying, "You're killing us here, man." Well, at least one Wisconsin dairy farmer has gone public with an alternative to that, and Larry Lee wrote about it over at Brownfield Ag News, saying that Mike Yeager, a dairy farmer from Mineral Point, has an alternative to Trump's sweetheart deal with Argentina. And he says, "I think maybe we need to encourage the sales of dairy cows strictly going to slaughter. That'll put more beef on the market and ultimately take care of the surplus of milk. So you might be taking care of two birds with one stone." Trump says by putting more Argentine beef on the market, it would help bring consumer prices down. But again, we've got this surplus of milk here. We've got a surplus of dairy cows. And so perhaps culling the herd might be a better alternative that benefits Wisconsin farmers and the Wisconsin marketplace. Because from a national standpoint, you've got the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and the Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund and United Stock Growers of America and other farming groups. All of them have been some of Trump's biggest supporters, and they are all sharply critical of Trump's idea because of what it could do to ranchers and to feedlot operators. Plus, it runs counter to the stated purpose of Trump's tariffs, which is to encourage more domestic production and help American ranchers compete. But American ranchers and cattle farmers can't compete if they're being undercut by Argentine beef. Now, at the moment, Argentine beef accounts for a very small slice of beef imports, about 2%. And a lot of that is just for ground beef. So it may not do much for steak prices and things like that. But it has the potential. Every bit that comes in is you know, a supply from U.S. farmers that isn't getting used. Now, beef prices have been soaring, thanks in part to the smallest U.S. herd size for beef cattle since 1961. Due to years of low cattle prices and now drought, and Trump slapping a 50% tariff on beef from Brazil. And, oh, by the way, did I mention there's also Trump's ag secretary saying that, you know, there's an infestation of New World screwworm from Mexico, and that there may be problems with hoof and mouth disease in Argentina that might affect Argentine beef imports. There's no shortage of reasons why you wouldn't do whatever you could from an American rural farmer and rancher perspective to help them, and at the same time, put more beef on the marketplace that could help drive prices down for consumers. There's only one real wrong way to go about doing this. And it's the one that the president of the United States is seeking right now to undercut American farmers, first the soybean farmers, now the cattle farmers and ranchers as well. Our homeroom segment coming up about the crazy state school funding system is coming up right after this break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Nice to have you back at 7:35 on this Wednesday morning. Now, there are local news updates throughout the course of our show here, 6 to 9 weekdays on the Civic Media Radio Network. But even as those local updates are happening on most stations, we continue yammering over here from Chippewa Falls and Madison. And if you'd ever like to listen into the show that way or watch what we're doing, there's always the Civic Media app where you can tune into one of the other stations that continues to play the network feed. You can certainly watch what we do on YouTube or Facebook. That would be the Up North News Facebook or YouTube pages, or the Civic Media YouTube and Facebook pages. Or you can sign up for us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify or Apple and follow the program that way. And you'll never miss a minute of what it is that we are talking about over here on weekday mornings, like at 7:35, 7:36 now, on Wednesday morning for our homeroom segment when we talk about public education in Wisconsin and, you know, its many positive qualities and the many threats that are out there from privatization, from people playing politics with our schools, people playing politics with school funding in our state. We have a state funding system that is much more convoluted than it needs to be. And each session of the legislature, every 2 years when they write a new state budget, they try to work around the system as best they can. And in this last state budget, legislative Republicans and Democratic Governor Tony Evers finally reached a deal, but it is a deal that is not exactly sitting well with a large number of school districts that are not seeing much of an increase in general state aids. They're seeing some increased dollars in other parts of the budget, like special education. But on the whole, they are still having a tough time keeping up with inflation, conceivably leading to another record round of school referendums across the state. So joining us to talk more about it is the president of the school board in Viroqua, Angie Lawrence, who was also part of a news conference last week with some state lawmakers to describe the problems in the system and how school districts have to live with the reality of them in the here and now. And Angie Lawrence joins us now from Viroqua. Angie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm great. How are you?
It's nice to have you here. I'm very well. Thank you very much. So we saw you in this news conference last week talking about the system here, which, again, if you take the party labels out of it and you just look at the system itself, this is not something that you or probably any other school board president would draw up on a napkin someplace and put into effect. And yet you have to learn it and deal with, you know, the realities of the here and now. So let folks know what you were saying last week about general state aid in this new state budget and what it means for school districts like yours.
So number one, we don't even get the budget until October. So that's one of the problems. I mean, school starts, our annual budget starts in July. So I don't know how many businesses run their business by not having a budget until, you know, 5-6 months after their annual year begins. So that's one issue. So when this came out, this recent budget came out and their decisions, it affected a lot of school districts, millions and millions of dollars that they thought that they were going to receive and then they didn't receive. That wasn't the case in our district. We received a little over $8,000 less than what we had anticipated, but it didn't affect us as it did many other schools. What has affected us is the voucher program. So the voucher program, and I can give you an example, the Academy of Excellence in Milwaukee, for example, they are going to receive over $50 million this year from our local taxpayers. Their last year, only 18% of their students they only met expectations, 18%. Zero exceeded expectations in language arts. And then in math, only 13% of their students met expectations with 0% exceeding expectations. I don't know about anybody out there, but if your school district had that type of success or failure, I think that you would be trying to contact the DPI. You would try to get the DPI in there. You would be trying to perhaps close the school because they were incapable of meeting the expectations for children and their educational outcomes. So that's one of the issues. Our school district spent almost $1.2 million from our local taxpayers for the voucher program this last year. So we're supposed to provide a high quality of education for every student, and it's just not happening with this voucher program. They have no accountability. They say on the website that they hope that you'll take the test, but if you don't want to, that's all you have to do is send them an email. So they're not even advocating for students to and families to take the test to see how accountable their educational system is in Milwaukee. They also have only 800 of their students actually attend in brick and mortar buildings in Milwaukee. So that means that there's, because they have about 3,700 students in their program, they did last year. And so that means that there's, you know, 2,900 students that are homeschooled, which that was not the intent of the voucher program. And they're not perhaps testing. They don't know if the students are doing the work or if the parents are doing the work. They don't know if the students are taking the test or the parents are taking the test. And there's no accountability for these dollars. So I don't believe that that's our legislators' intent, but that's what's happening. It would be like the Viroqua Area School District saying, we're going to create a voucher school because we have brick and mortar. And we're going to include all of the Amish population. And we're not going to have licensed teachers. We're just going to let them teach. And we're going to let them follow their curriculum, whatever that might be. And then we're going to receive funding for it. And once again, I do not think that's the intent of our legislators, but that is something that could happen that would bring dollars to our school district without us really having to do anything at all. I mean, that's ludicrous. We're not going to do that. But those are the types of things that can happen because of how the voucher program is running. And then you spoke out about referendums. So we have passed two referendi in the last 4 or 5 years. One was brick and mortar. We added a very large technical education component to our school and updated the equipment, which was very much necessary, and then made some repairs that were needed. And that was a $20 million referendum. And we were very, very fortunate to have support of our community. But we did have a failed referendum, and that was operational. And then we had to go back to the community and ask for the dollars again. And that this time when we did pass, it was only for 2 years. So now we're going to have to go to a referendum again in another year to ask our community to assist in funding our school. This costs a lot of money. It's a huge amount of time and effort to explain why we need it. You know, our community, like I said, is very philanthropic. They support schools. But why are we going every 2 or 3 years to referendum? And a big part of it is the state budget. The state budget, you know, only lasts for 2 years. So we never know what's going to happen in the next 2 years. If they're going to take money away from us, if they're going to add a small amount, if it's going to meet inflation. So this has become a huge problem for trying to operate our school districts and prepare for the future. And there's also a bunch of inequity. I mean, I could go on and on forever with this, but it's creating more inequity for students because your poor communities are failing at a very large rate their referendum that they're trying to pass. And your wealthy school districts are passing their referendum. And so that's creating, like I said, a huge separation between the haves and the have-nots. And I believe in every child receiving a very high level of education, and I'm sure all your listeners do as well. But why is our state and all our tax dollars not going to the state, and then all of those dollars are being dispersed equally with every student versus having to go to a referendum and trying to pass something and spending, like I said, a very large amount of money, a very large amount of time and energy, and you don't know if it's going to pass or not?
No.
How do you keep your teachers? How do you keep your programs? It doesn't make any sense.
No, there's such uncertainty as a result of the system. Angie Lawrence is the president of the school board in Viroqua, and we're talking about the many flaws in the system that were frankly only exacerbated by this new state budget. And for all the wisecracks about people talking about, you know, government schools and resources, well, imagine, you know, how much fewer the challenges would be if you weren't skimming nearly $1 billion a year off the top and taking that away and giving it to these schools that are not accountable, that are not nearly as transparent, that are doing things, like you said, where their students are opting out of standardized tests at an alarming rate and leading, therefore, to more referendums. The system, as much as we say there are problems with it, the fact of the matter is that the basics are pretty easy to understand. Yes. We have a Wisconsin Constitution that says that, you know, education should be supported in as uniform a way as practicable. These are things that we can get back to those standards. There was a Blue Ribbon Commission, yes, dedicated to fixing this system with Republicans and Democrats on it, and yet nothing has come of it since. So, Angie, this is just all to say, we can identify the flaws in the system. We can also fix the flaws in the system if we could get lawmakers that wanted to take your concerns seriously.
Well, it's not rocket science. Right. I mean, you're talking about deferring tax dollars, property tax dollars from different communities, having to raise those tax dollars versus the state saying, you know what, we're going to raise taxes and it's all going to go to schools, not all of the dollars, obviously, but it's going to go to schools so that every child in the state of Wisconsin receives a high quality education. And taxpayers should be able to understand that because they're already paying more in property taxation by passing a referendum. I mean, and schools are fiscally responsible. It's not like we're spending needless dollars to educate our kids. And the budget is not meeting inflation. Our state is becoming funded at a lower rate than all of the others, I think we're 24th right now. Don't quote me on that, as far as state funding. So we can do way better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was once upon a time when Wisconsin was in or near a top 10 for support of our public schools. Some politicians said that was too much. Well, now, as we're dropping to the middle of the pack and below, you wonder at what point they're going to say, OK, that's enough. We don't want to fall to the very bottom. Well, unfortunately, it seems like some politicians want exactly that as part of the ongoing push to privatization. And it's what we follow in this segment with good people like Angie Lawrence, who serves as president of the Viroqua School Board. Angie, I really appreciate your expertise and your service. Thank you so much for joining us today to share more of the background about it.
There's one more thing. You know, they say that they're funding students that have some type of a disability. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you look at how their formula works out, we're not receiving hardly any dollars for students with disabilities.
Exactly. More things to examine there. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Coming up in the next hour, we'll be talking to Earl Ingram of the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast. That and more still ahead. Dr. Kristen Lyerly joining us at 8:35. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, let's visit now with Civic Media Sports Director Jimmy Koska. Very busy time of year here. We had been talking baseball. We're moving into football, basketball, and hockey are getting underway here as well. You got the Badgers, men who are starting their exhibition season, high school football playoffs. How do you even triage all this, Jimmy, when you're following it all?
One step at a time. I mean, football is kind of first and foremost. I got the basketball football hat on today because this is our all conference meeting today. It's our kind of our final duty now that we're eliminated. We're not in the playoffs. This is our final duty as football coaches for the 2025 season, and then we're on to the off season with that. But for the teams that are in the playoffs, 8-player playoffs began last Saturday, went very largely chalk in that round, and then the 11-player playoffs begin this Friday, and that's the remaining 224 teams that are playing in 11 players. So this time of year is exciting. Last night was the start of volleyball, of course, and soccer. We have cross-country sectionals this week. Tennis is already at state. Golf is already at state. So this time of year for high school alone is really busy. But as you said, there are also, obviously, there was the overlap. We had the Brewers in action as of last week. The Bucks got underway last night. You've got the Packers going, the Badgers. It is all happening right this second, right now in sports.
Let's start with something wildly speculative on the Brewers, and then we'll get to the concrete stuff that's actually happening. Brandon Woodruff, is he coming? What are we going to have for starting pitchers coming back next year?
Please don't break my heart.
It's kind of the same. It's kind of the same thing every offseason, right? Like, you look at it, you're like, well, we don't really know what we're going to come into next year with. And then there's going to be the offseason move or two where you're wondering, okay, what just happened? What are the Brewers doing? And they show up in the spring, and they've got a pitching staff, and you can't name half the guys. That's what's going to happen again this year. They're going to keep doing what they've been doing because, A, that's what they do, and, B, they have to stay under a certain financial threshold that some teams, the Dodgers, what
I'm worried about. Yes. And that's what you're hearing is that, you know, Mark Adonasio and others need to open things up a little bit more, which, look, I am not here to defend or apologize, you know, billionaires and multimillionaires and all that. I'm just trying to temper expectations when you're in the smallest market in the league.
Yeah, the Brewers' share of spending on the roster compared to revenue is among the lowest in Major League Baseball. It's in the bottom 10.
Okay.
But this is, you know, and you're right. It's a small market. There's not a big a big payout coming, if you will, from anything that happens in the market. So
no. So you either have to, bring that percentage up, which is a little bit less of a percentage for the ownership. But you know what brings in more revenue? Winning in the postseason and going deeper into it. So yeah, I mean, even Freddy Peralta, as I understand, they don't have to trade him this coming year, but there might be reasons to trade him early while you can get the most value, especially a guy who you already know is going to reach 100 pitches, you know, by the sixth inning. So he's in no danger of ever having a complete game. So, you know, I don't know if his value is really that much more this year compared to next year.
You know, it's what they do with Corbin Burns, right? It's what they've done historically is try to max out their value, and especially pitchers. They seem to find and develop pitchers like you wouldn't believe, and they've still got a strong farm system. So that'll be an interesting case to follow. I mean, if he goes, I think it just tracks with everything else the Brewers have done.
Which, by the way, not the same as Corbin Burnson, the actor. I learned that earlier today, the hard way. All right, you mentioned high school football playoffs, which I'm sure are still on one or two Civic Media stations heading into the postseason here.
Yeah, right now I think I've got five or six games scheduled this week across the network, and that's just Wisconsin teams. We just added a bunch of stations in the UP, and they do high school football as well. And that's exciting. We've got football on a number of signals around the state, and as you might imagine, you know, some of those stations are also doing some of the other sports. I think last night we had two soccer game matches and then a volleyball match as well on the radio. So for Civic Media stations across the network, just check your local station. We've got the calendars right up on the front page of those websites.
That is awesome. All right, let's kind of speed through what we've got also on the Civic Media calendar. On Friday, you've got the Badger men's basketball team taking on Oklahoma. It's an exhibition game.
Coverage the easier begins of the two exhibition games, by the way.
Coverage begins at 6:30 Friday on several stations, and then Platteville the following week, and then the regular season begins. That's interesting.
Yeah, they have Platteville on Wednesday next week. And Platteville just graduated a trio of 5-year seniors who contributed massive amounts to the program. Be a bit of a different look this year, but what is great about the Platteville Wisconsin game is they use that game too to fundraise for Guarding Against Cancer. Yes. So they do turn that into a fundraiser. Of course, Jeff Gard, the head coach at Platteville, and Greg Gard, the head coach at Wisconsin, are brothers from Mighty Cobb, Wisconsin. So there's a fundraising component to that as well.
Okay. And then we've got on Saturday, the Badger football team is at Oregon. Coverage begins at 4 p.m., kind of a later game there. Any bold predictions on how that one's going to go, Jimmy?
It'll be the last night game the Badgers get this year.
Okay.
That's it.
there's your prediction.
That's my prediction because yeah. We had a thread yesterday in our Civic Media sports group chat about just how much in pain we were. The Big Ten power rankings of the Badgers, 18th out of 18. It is sad times right now.
18th in the Big Ten. That
out of 18.
That hurts. And then of course, you've got the Packers Sunday against Pittsburgh. First time taking on Aaron Rodgers because we didn't play him when he was with the Jets at all. How do you think that's going to go?
The Steelers uniforms are going to be dominating the conversation, I think.
Dude, they're so gross.
But, you know, I think what will be fun for people who follow the Packers is they're going to see a lot of Wisconsin ties in the Steelers between, obviously, Aaron Rodgers, but also T.J. Watt, Keanu Benton. You're also going to see Nick Herbig. You're going to see a lot of familiar names on the Steelers roster. So I think that'll be kind of fun in a way for people who really get deep into the lore of Wisconsin football or even high school football in Wisconsin. I think that'll be kind of a fun treat for them.
Uh-huh. And then finally, the World Series is going to be Toronto versus the Dodgers. For Toronto, that includes Marshfield native Dalton Varsho. Are you going to be watching that?
Well, it's funny. It's hard to watch playoff sports on TV when you don't have like a satellite or over the air. So if it's not on an app, I'm probably not going to get it. But hey, I think they have it right. Toronto is America's team right now. So
Toronto is America's team. I like that. Oh, Canada. Jimmy Koska, thank you so much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Take care, man.
All right. Earl Ingram is standing by, and then Dr. Kristen Lyerly as well in the next hour. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.